Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Keep My Commandments when we come back. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something must be wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools. They're banned from our public institutions. They've been erased from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they teach this ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we Americans have made them a part of our national consciousness. Now, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion? An abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers practiced and they advocated the Ten Commandments. And they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the benefits for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, or Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic. And it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, and entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine. Send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about Keep My Commandments. Keep My Commandments. 172 times we find that phrase in the Bible. Pretty important phrase, probably mentioned more often than any other single doctrine or statute, law, rule, regulation, custom, usage, or practice in the Scripture. Keep My Commandments. Now, there's an interesting corollary to that over in the book of Proverbs. In fact, it starts off right there in the very first chapter of Proverbs, and it says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion, and a wise man will hear, and he will increase learning. And a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels, to understand a proverb, and the interpretation, the words of the wise, and their dark sayings. And the fear of the eternal is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." In chapter 2, God goes on a step further. He says, "My son, if you will receive my words and hide my commandments with you, so that you incline your ear unto wisdom and apply your heart to understanding, And if you cry after knowledge and lift up your voice to understanding, if you seek knowledge and understanding as silver, and search for silver, if you search for understanding as for hid treasures, then shall you understand the fear of the Eternal and find the knowledge of God. For the Eternal giveth wisdom, and out of his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He lays up sound wisdom for the righteous. He's a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keeps the paths of judgment and preserves the way of his saints. Then shall you understand righteousness and judgment and equity and every good path. Now that's quite a statement. You want to have wisdom and understanding? You know, most people go to college. Spend thousands of dollars going to Harvard and Yale and Princeton to get wisdom and understanding and knowledge and go out in the world and make a lot of money, like Ken Lay did over at Enron, and rip off 30 or 40,000 people at the same time. Well, we would like to be wise, but we go to the wrong institutions, in my view, to get wisdom. I don't think there's very much wisdom over at Harvard, Yale, Princeton. Wisdom and understanding come from the Scripture. Now, of course, fools despise wisdom and understanding. Fools despise the Scripture. Well, that's from the perspective of the author of Scripture. I didn't write that. I'm just a reporter reporting to you that that's his opinion. That's what he thought. And he wrote it down, and I'm a reporter, and I just reported it to you. Now, in this series of programs, I brought to your attention a subject matter called Keep the Commandments, or Keep My Commandments. And I brought to you four or five laws. There's 133 of them. I won't cover all 133. That gets kind of tedious. But there is a number, or there are a number of these laws, rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices that we Christians here in the Western world, Australia, New Zealand, and in Western Europe, that we do or we practice. We go to church, and we believe that we obey God. We think we're pretty smart people. I mean, I think we think we're pretty smart people, pretty knowledgeable. I mean, if you're a Baptist and you go to Baptist church, you know you're a lot smarter than the average Joe Sixpack Catholic. I mean, that deserved, you know, that the despised, deceived, poor wonk who worships the Pope and kisses his ring, you know, we know that those Catholics are really dumb, don't we? On the other hand, that Catholic, he's sitting over there, he says, oh, those poor Protestants, all of them headed to hellfire and brimstone because they have deviated from the truth. They have left the church. You know, these people and religious people, they get very excited about this. Very excited. But did you notice that the Catholics and the Protestants both, when they come into the courtroom, and the clerk says, raise your right hand and be sworn, and they dutifully raise their right hand. I was watching this the other day. Nancy Pelosi, Catholic lady from San Francisco, new female Speaker of the House of Representatives, new milestone in American degeneration. We've got a woman now running our government, or she's number three in the hierarchy. And right away, you know, all you ladies are sitting out there saying, well, look at that insensitive male chauvinist. Yeah, I'm just a reporter, lady. And your God reported that children are your oppressors and women rule over you. Children are your oppressors and women rule over you. And that's your Creator making that statement. That wasn't me. And he's kind of deriding you. You let your kids get away with murder, dictate to you and oppress you. And then you elect women to your third highest position in the country and then wonder why in the hell your country is going to hell in a handbasket. I just thought I'd throw that out there. Now, that's offensive. But then, you know, the Bible is a very offensive book. It offends Catholics. It offends Protestants and Mormons. It offends the Muslims and the Buddhists. It offends the Republicans and the Democrats and the Communists. Everybody is offended by the Scripture. Not in, entirely clear why that's true, but it's entirely clear that it is true. And the author of the scripture, the guy we call Jesus, you know, in the last program I pointed out, I didn't know his name, so I have to call him Jesus because I don't have another name to hang on him. He made a couple of three statements in here that are really offensive, really eye-openers. In Matthew 10, verse 34, he says, "Think not that I have come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword." Now, you talk to the average Baptist over here, or Catholic, and he'd say, Jesus is the Prince of Peace. And our president's constantly talking about peace, peace, peace. I get tired of the word peace. Nobody wants peace. Americans don't want peace. And now right away somebody's going to say, well, that's why we voted for the Democrats, so we could bring our troops home from Iraq. Hang on a second. Yeah, I'll agree with you. You want to bring your troops home from Iraq, but you don't want to close your military bases. The first time somebody suggests that we close down some military base, and you'll have 10,000 people out there with placards and signs, that are objecting to the closure of our military base. And that's because we want the money that comes from it. See, we're all in favor of you people out in California and Washington and Oregon and New York paying your taxes to support our military base up here at Fort Leonard Wood. Now, if somebody were to suggest, well, let's close the military base at Fort Leonard Wood, why, the people of Missouri would go ballistic on you. Hell, they'd vote Republican in the next election if you did that. And if you Republicans and Democrats got together and wanted to close our Fort Leonard Wood base, we'd vote communist. Now, don't sit there and tell me that Americans want peace. There's no money in peace. There's a lot of money in war. And that's what Jesus said that he came to bring you. He said, I didn't come to bring peace. I came to bring war. And he certainly has accomplished that. He has succeeded beyond his wildest expectations. He said, I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's foes shall be those of his own household. And he that loves father or mother more than me isn't worthy of me, and he that loves son or daughter more than me isn't worthy of me, and he that takes not his cross and follows after me isn't worthy of me. He that finds his life shall lose it, and he that loses his life for my sake shall find it. Those of your own household will be your own worst enemies. So when I come on the air and I make these kinds of reports, I make a lot of enemies. I get a lot of emails and I get a lot of letters and phone calls, you know. And if you say something that's anti-Jewish or anti-Talmudic, now we'll get a bunch of letters this week from Jews and others, and they'll say, well, you anti-Semitic so-and-so. Well, for just all of you Jews out there in radio land, I can trace my genealogy all the way back to Adam and Eve through Zerah, through Judah. You got that, kids? Through Judah, through Zerah. And I did that through the British Israel Society. I'm the opposite side of the family from Queen Elizabeth. Queen Elizabeth is a Pharaoh's line descendant of Judah, and I'm a Zerah line, came out of Scotland. So, you know, I might save you a nickel there on your email message over there. I don't need somebody to preach me a sermon about anti-Semitism, because I'm one of them. But nevertheless, it does come to my attention that we ought to tell people the truth once in a while. If it's unsettling, well, so be it. But it's kind of fun and it's kind of refreshing. So I thought I'd share a little of that refreshing truth with you. You go into the courtroom and you swear an oath. Did you know the Bible tells you not to do that? Now, why do you people go to church on Sunday and call Jesus Lord, Lord, and go into court on Monday morning, raise your right hand and swear this oath in violation of a statute that for all you Christians out there now, I ain't reading this out of the Old Testament. I didn't get this, you know, from Daniel or Hosea or Amos or Moses. I got this right from Jesus, live and direct. Listen to this. Matthew 5, verse 33. If you go to Bible, take a look at this. He says, again, you have heard that it has been said by them of old time, you shall not forswear yourself, but shall perform unto the eternal your oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, because it's God's throne, neither by the earth, because it is its footstool, neither by Jerusalem, because it is the city of the great king, and neither shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your communication be yea, yea, or nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these comes of evil. You ever hear that before? You ever go to church and have your preacher say, hey, listen, next time you go to church, tell them you ain't taking this oath. Now, one time some guy said, well, that's why us religious people, we don't swear, we affirm. So you walk into court, you raise your right hand, and you say, do you affirm that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God? I do. And then they say, well, see, no, I didn't swear. Excuse me. Excuse me. That word, affirm, is a euphemism for swear. You know, if I said to you, hey, let's go out and commit adultery tonight. Let's go down to Flo's whorehouse and tear off a little with one of Flo's girls. No, you might look at me and say, oh, my, no, I wouldn't do that. Okay. So, hey, listen, what are you doing tonight, Tom? You want to go out and fool around a little bit? Yeah, George, hey, let's go down to Mountain Home. Maybe we'll fool around a little bit. Can you explain to me what fooling around means? What did you have in mind if you were going to go out and fool around a little bit? Now, let's go down to the Ritz and see if we can hit upon some girls down there. Well, you know, hit upon. What did you mean by the word hit on? What did you have in mind? Hey, kids, let's get down to earth and let's start using our heads here for a change. The last sentence there tells you, but let your communication be yea, yea, or nay, nay. Now, the next time you walk into court, why don't you tell the judge, no, I'm not going to swear. And you say, well, then you can affirm. No, I'm not going to affirm. Well, then you can go to jail for contempt. Well, now, have you ever thought about going to jail for contempt rather than violate the law of God? I've never seen anybody do that. I've seen a lot of religious people. I've seen a lot of religious people go into court and swear an oath, and those that won't swear affirm. And they use the euphemism to affirm rather than swear, but you don't see anybody walking in there saying, no, Judge, no. Jesus told me not to do that. He told me to come in here and testify and let my yea be yea and my nay be nay, but I can't say more than that. I've never seen it. You won't find that in Christians. You might find it in Muslims. Now, I can't tell you about them, but you're going to find it in any Christians. So there's one for you. And now here's another one. You know, you go to church every Sunday, so you see the altar, don't you? You know, you go into church, and up there in the front of the church, there's this altar. And I got to looking at the word altar here. And in Exodus 20, verses 24 through 26, it says, an altar of earth you shall make unto me, and you shall sacrifice thereon thy burnt offerings and thy peace offerings, thy sheep and thine oxen, and all the places where I record my name. And all I will come unto you, and I will bless you. And if you will make me an altar of stone, you shall not build it of hewn stone, for if you lift up any tool upon it, you have polluted it. And neither shall you go up by steps unto my altar, that your nakedness be not discovered thereon. All right, now, I looked at that and I said, well, gee, last time I was in a church, I noticed that the altar is built up on a raised platform that you approach by steps. Just take a look in your church next Sunday when you go to church. Watch your preacher up there. Watch your preacher, who is an educated man with letters after his name, who went to college, and we presume read the Bible, and was instructed in all of the laws and customs and usages and practices of the God of Isaac, the God of Abraham, the God of Moses, and knows that law concerning altars. And he walks up to the altar by steps. And take a look at the altar and tell me, is it made out of stone, or is it made out of earth, or is it made out of wood? and has any tool come upon it to make it. Now, I've got an alder out here in my backyard. Because I'm in the cattle business, I need it because I have to kill the firstborn. And so every once in a while, somebody looks at my pile of rocks out there in the backyard and they say, "What's that?" And I say, "That's an altar." And they say, "A what? That's an altar." And they kind of look at you like you're Mork from Ork, you know, an altar. Why on earth would you have an altar? Well, excuse me, kids, but this is not the Japanese Bible. This didn't come from China. I'm reading to you from the King James Version of the Bible, the Scripture. You know, the Bible that Bill Clinton used to tuck under his arm when he was coming out of church every Sunday for the photo ops. Him and Hillary, remember? Bill Clinton had this Bible under his arm. John F. Kennedy had one of these on his desk. Billy Graham holds it up in his crusades and he says, "The Bible says!" But I never heard Billy Graham ever say a word about altars. I've never heard Billy Graham ever say anything about oaths. Have you? I'm just reporting here that Jesus said we ought to live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. This oath thing over here comes from the New Testament, all you New Testament Christians out there. Now, in Luke 6:46, this same Jesus asks you this question. He says, "Hey, how come you guys come into church and pray to me and call me Lord, Lord, and then don't do the things that I tell you?" Now, he told you, don't take oaths. So you go in and you take oaths. Nancy Pelosi took an oath. I don't know, Nancy. Well, I guess it's all right. She's a Catholic. Now, Catholics do not follow the laws of God. They don't practice the scriptural laws. They don't practice the laws of Moses. How do I know that? I'm watching them. I got eyes. I can see. And when I watch these people and they go into church and they've got these altars up in the front of the church, I can't help but say, "Well, who built that altar?" Well, it was put in there by local 383, you know, the Carpenters Union. How'd they put it in? They put it in there with routers and squares and hammers and nails. They build it. Did they put any iron tool upon it? Yeah. Were they told not to do that? Yeah. Why do you do that which is plainly? Let me read this to you again. It says, "Neither shall you go up by steps into my altar." Why do you have steps going up to your altar? If it says, don't make steps to your altar, why do you have those steps there? If it says, if you make me an altar of stone, you shall not build it of hewn stone. Hewn stone, bricks, concrete blocks. Don't make it of hewn stone. No iron tool comes upon it. And I just thought I'd point that out. It says here, "You shall not make you any grove of trees near unto my altar, the altar of the eternal your God, which you shall make you." Matthew 5, verses 23 and 24. "Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has aught against you, leave there your gift before the altar, and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift." Jesus was familiar with altars. He spoke of an altar. Evidently, he'd seen one from time to time. And it's a place where you leave your gift, leaves your tithe. It's at the altar at the temple. They had altars in the temple, but they weren't made with hewn stone, and they didn't have steps going up to them. I just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. So I mentioned to you that, you know, Christians eat pork and shellfish and lobsters and one thing and another. Let's just take a look here at some laws that people just typically violate routinely. I mentioned to you the other day that here in America, as a general rule, not in every case, but as a general rule, we Americans practice about 51 laws. And there are 82 laws that we consistently violate. Now, I've mentioned to you the fat and blood law in Leviticus 7:26 and 27. And Leviticus 3, verse 17 says, don't eat fat, don't eat blood. So we go to McDonald's and eat 30% fat, and probably right after we get out of church on Sunday, after we have been in there watching the priest run up and down the steps to the altar, which is made out of hewn stone or made out of manufactured wood, which has had an iron tool upon it. We practice unjust weights and balances in this country in violation of Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36 by using Federal Reserve notes and mortgages and other evidences of debt, you know, like stocks and bonds. But why? We practice witchcraft in this country, and in more than just one way, we actually have a holy day dedicated to witchcraft called Halloween. Excuse me, but witchcraft is a capital felony which is prohibited in Leviticus 20, verse 27, where God says, you shall not suffer a witch to live. He tells us over and over again, don't practice witchcraft. Not quite as many times as he tells us to keep his commandments. But he tells us over and over again not to practice witchcraft, necromancy, and a whole host and plethora of other terms and conditions, you know, like astrology and so on. And then we dedicate a day, a holy day. I mean, we Americans wouldn't get caught dead practicing the Day of Atonement or the Feast of Tabernacles or the Last Great Day, or heaven forbid that we should keep the Sabbath on Saturday. I mean, we wouldn't think of doing something like the Passover or the Days of Unleavened Bread. But we have a day dedicated to. And probably you have a church festival, and you probably have church services on Halloween. I don't know, kids. Then you practice Christmas, don't you? God, everybody loves Christmas, which is prohibited in Jeremiah 10, verses 1 through 6. God tells you not to learn the way of the heathen, then describes the heathen practice of going into the woods, cutting out a little fir tree, bringing it in and decking it with what? Gold and silver. And what are the colors of Christmas? Green, gold, and silver. What's the color of the fir tree? Green. And what do we deck it with? Gold and silver. I don't know, kids. I'm not telling you not to practice Christmas. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But hey, listen, there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty, and I think that you should be aware of, somebody ought to at least bring to your attention, that there's a penalty for this. Now, so far, we have gotten away without paying the penalties. You know, as a little kid, I can remember we Americans used to practice the Sabbath in this country. Sabbath. The world stopped Saturday night. Now, this is in the middle of World War II. If there was ever an ox in the ditch, it surely must have been during World War II, when we all needed to work 24/7 to defeat the Japanese and the Germans in World War II. But when I was a little kid, living in Corbell, California, at Northern Redwood Lumber Company, where my granddaddy was the yard superintendent there, he was one of the muckety mucks in the company. The company closed down the mill Saturday night, and nobody worked on Sunday. It was better than that. Nobody bought, sold, or traded in Corbell, California, because the mill owned the Texaco service station. They owned the grocery store, the dry goods store. They owned the ice cream store, the cookhouse, and the bunkhouse. And the cookhouse wasn't open. You couldn't get a meal. You couldn't buy an ice cream cone. You couldn't buy a bag of potato chips. And you couldn't get a gallon of gas on Sunday. You know, now, irrespective of what day of the week the Sabbath is, the Muslims practice it on Friday, and the Christians on Sunday, and the Jews and the Adventists on Saturday. So there's a little discussion as to which day is the right day. But the moral to the story is, we were told not to work on the Sabbath. And so we were told not to buy, sell, or trade, or do business, or do your own pleasure on the Sabbath. There are seven elements Seven things that you do or don't do in order to observe, to keep, to practice the Sabbath. One of the four, or one of the Ten Commandments. It is the fourth commandment. There are ten of these commandments. This is a capital felony, punishable by death. A guy is explained, you know, in the books of Moses that he was out gathering sticks, you know, to build a fire on the Sabbath. And so they caught him, and so they brought him in, and they executed him. They stoned him to death for picking up sticks on the Sabbath. People today work on Saturday. Saturday is the biggest business day of the week. It's the day that we go to the mall. It's the day that we go shopping. It's the day that we're working. Sunday is the day we go to church. Well, you know, unless, of course, your shift is working on Sunday. Now, you know, if you're rotating shift and it's 24/7, you know, then you got to work on Sunday, so you work on Sunday, but then it's a requirement. Your ox is in a ditch. That's what they tell us. Your ox is in a ditch. Or I'm a policeman or a fireman and I have to work on Sunday. I have to work on the Sabbath. Is that right? I didn't know that. And I'm suspicious that maybe the God of Israel doesn't know that either. So why don't we flip over here and take a look at Leviticus chapter 26. And let's just see what God says he's going to do about that when we come back. Got to give you a reminder here if I can find my paperwork. Maybe I won't be telling you anything because maybe I can't find my papers here. Meanwhile, back on the farm, so I don't have to do this program over again. I can't believe I did that. I'm sitting here at my desk and can't find my papers. Well, if I can't find them, then I can't tell you that this is the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And if I can't tell you that, then I don't have to worry about the FCC getting after me for not reminding you that this is the Law Hour, an editorial review. So I'll get on with my program, and if I find my paperwork here in the meantime, I'll tell you more about it. Let me get over here to Leviticus 26. Leviticus chapter 26. This is a penal clause chapter. This is the chapter that says that here's what I'm going to do to you. Ah, here it is. Ah, now I can comply with the FCC. Let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School or the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's George Gordon. .org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views and expressions that you hear on this program are mine or mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Again, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, here's a reminder that we're offering a new class on health and healing, which covers the alternative health methods, alternative health care. being used for the treatment, for instance, of cancer, muscular dystrophy, and Parkinson's disease, all these degenerative diseases that we Americans suffer from. About half of us now in our lifetime are going to get cancer. And how to prevent these degenerative diseases and the use and application of essential oils, supernutritional foods, and things like paperwork, hands-on teaching, allergic reaction testing, acupressure, essential oils and things like foods. And there are 10 cures to cancer. Did you know that 10 have been discovered so far? 8 of them by the American Medical Association or allopathic medical doctors, which are never used. Never used. Well, only by quacks and others that are outside the medical profession, because it doesn't comport with or comply with the protocols. It doesn't make enough money. So my wife, being a cancer survivor now for 28 years, is going to conduct the school February the 5th through the 9th and share with you the secrets that she's used for 28 years to beat cancer. Secrets. They shouldn't be secret. They're right out there for everybody. They've been published for years. And if you'd like to learn what those are and how to use them, this class will be February the 5th through the 9th here in Isabella, Missouri. Just give us a call here at the law school to make reservations. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Yeah, I better put that up there so that I don't lose it again when we go to sign off. Now, I said that we were going to take a look here at Leviticus chapter 26, the penal clause chapter, so that when all of these things come upon you, you don't say to yourself, oh my God, why is God doing this to me? Last year, it was on December the 26th, 2004, just a little over a year ago, 4506, 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, now there was a major earthquake over in Indonesia, and it killed 250,000 people, mainly Muslims. And I'm sure those Muslim people are sitting there, why did God do that? God did that to you as a curse. Boys and girls, a tidal wave that sweeps in and destroys your house and kills your family is not a blessing. That is a curse. And you ought to ask yourself, why did God do that to me? This Hurricane Katrina, which happened about a year later here in the United States, down in New Orleans and on the Gulf Coast, you know, most people in this country say, well, it's just a shake of the dice. You know, it's just the way it came out. It's just bad luck. No. It's worse than bad luck. It's, you got your God working against you over here, and he told you. He said, now, if you don't sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what I tell you, then I'm going to punish you. And some of this is going to be in the form of bad weather. Some of it in the form of earthquakes. Jesus mentioned that in Matthew 24. He said there's going to be earthquakes in diverse places. Earthquakes generate tidal waves. Tidal waves kill a lot of people. Why are we getting these? Well, because you people won't practice these laws. So when these penalties come upon you, your leaders, your church people, they say, well, we just can't know the mind of God. We just can't figure out why God does this. Because his ways are higher than our ways. These guys have a real good bedside manner. But they never tell you what the hell the problem is. Well, I suppose it's because they don't know what the hell the problem is. So let me tell you what the problem is. In Matthew chapter 26, the first 13 verses, God tells you, says, if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, I'm going to give you rain in due season, and the land's going to yield or increase, and the trees of the field are going to yield their fruit. Kids, listen up. When it rains 22 inches on your land, and it blows 140 miles an hour, and it destroys your city and floods it like Hurricane Katrina, that is not rain in due season. Can you follow that? That is not rain in due season. Now, this God over here, now he says, now listen, if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them. Honest to God, kids, do you think that the people down in New Orleans are obeying God and keeping his commandments? You know, most of those people down there are Catholics, number one. They take oaths when they go into court. You know, they eat every abominable thing that you can cook, and some that we haven't even thought of. And they don't keep the Sabbath. They don't keep the holy days. And then they're all sitting down there going, I just can't figure out how come we got Hurricane Katrina whipping in on us. I don't understand it. Then your preacher comes along, or the priest, and he says, well, God's ways are higher than our ways, and we just can't understand why God does these things. I guess it's because nobody ever reads the Bible. Because if you read Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, here's somebody in the first person who gets right after it and says, hey, listen, you give me the finger, and here's what I'm going to do to you. You know, if you don't do what I tell you, here's what's coming down on you. And he doesn't stutter. As old George Bush says, watch my lips. He doesn't stutter. And he says, he'll give you rain in due season. He says, your threshing will reach to the vintage. Your vintage will reach to the sowing time. You'll eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. Hey, you'll dwell in your land safely. Now, you people down in Los Angeles are getting shot off your street corners by drive-by shooters, for crying out loud. I don't call that dwelling in your land safely. I can remember a time in America when people didn't just drive down the street randomly shooting people on the street corners. We didn't have that in this country. That's not a part and parcel of America. It is today, but it wasn't in the past. Well, I'll let you go ahead and read the rest of that, you know, up to verse 13. He says, now in verse 14, he changes his tactics. He says, I'm going to give you all these blessings. I'm going to make you rich and wealthy and powerful, and you're going to love it. In verse 14, he says, but if you will not hearken unto me, and if you will not do all of these commandments, and if you shall despise my statutes, or if your soul abhors my judgments, so that you will not do all of my commandments, but if you break my covenant, you break my contract, here's what I'm going to do to you. All right, now you want to go into court and raise your hand and swear an oath. You want to wear clothes with mingled fabrics. You want to crossbreed your cattle. And you want to hybridize your seed. And you want to clone these animals and feed them bypass protein. And you want to work for Monsanto and you want to buy stocks and bonds and use unjust weights and balances. Okay. No problem. Hell, don't let me get in the way. But you needed to be alerted to, just like the two snakes out here in my greenhouse. I need to alert you to the fact, I'm not telling you, you can't go through the greenhouse. I'm not telling you, thou shalt not go through the greenhouse. But I'm going to alert you to the fact that if you elect to go through the greenhouse, there are some poison snakes in there that eat my slugs and grubs at night. And I like them in there, because they're doing me a great service, and I've been here 20 years and they bit me yet. But if you get bit on the way through there, you ought to know why. It's because you walked through my greenhouse with your sandals on in July, and you ought not to walk through the greenhouse with sandals. You ought to be alerted to the fact that there are poison snakes out there. So here, he tells you very plainly in verse 14 and 15, now you give me the finger, and you don't pay attention. I'm not going to give you rain in due season. I'm going to give you Hurricane Katrina. It gets worse, though. He says, I'll also do this unto you. I'll even appoint over you terror, consumption, and the burning ague that shall consume your eyes and cause sorrow of heart, and you shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemies shall eat it. We sow our seed, farmers, and then ADM, Pillsbury, ConAgra, they take it and they make profits off of it, and you guys are struggling to make ends meet. That's because you're practicing agribusiness instead of agriculture, with hybrid seed instead of open pollinated seed, and because you're spraying with chemicals instead of fertilizing with Land Sabbaths and Jubilees. Okay, so now just wanted to let you know. I mean, you can farm, and you can farm according to Monsanto, or you can farm according to the God of Israel. It's a choice that you have to make. And if you make the wrong choice, then there's going to be some curses that go along with it. There's going to be some penalties. There's going to be some bad times. There's going to be the BLM and the Department of Agriculture and the Forest Service and Ranger Rick out there raising hell with you. Gets worse though. He says, I'm going to set my face against you, and you shall be slain before your enemies, and they that hate you shall reign over you, and you shall flee when none pursues. Now he says, I'm going to set my face against you, and you're going to be slain before your enemies. Now Afghanistan and Iraq ain't working out too good. Now World War II worked out real good, and World War I worked out real good, and the Spanish-American War worked out real good. But this Vietnam thing and Iraq, they're not working worth a damn now, are they? Now, we were told, and we were told plainly here in Leviticus 26, I don't think you need an interpreter now to explain this to you. Just pick it up and read it. As they say down at the Blue Room, read them and weep. When the dealer deals out the cards, you know, he says, okay, read them and weep. Of course, some guys smile, you know. And Halliburton and Brown, Kellogg and Root and Bechtel are all smiling. And then the rest of us are over here saying, what in hell happened? What the hell are we doing over here in Iraq? How come this war ain't going very good? And then he says, now, if you will not yet for all of this hearken unto me, then I'm going to punish you 7 times more for your sins. I'm going to break the pride of your power. I'm going to make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass. I'm going to give you drought. And as I speak here in January, we are having weird weather. We've got daffodils blooming here on January the 8th, 2007, in Isabella, Missouri. And the temperature as I speak at 10 minutes past 9 is 48 degrees. It should be about 18 degrees or 8 degrees or 8 below zero. It's not. It's 48 degrees. And the weatherman said it's going to hit 56 today. We've had record-breaking temperatures. They call it global warming. And your God over here says, I'm going to turn your heaven to iron and your earth to brass. And I'm going to make you eat the powder and the dust as opposed to rain in due season. Now, you know, you can come along and say, well, you know, Gordon, you know, you're just a gloom and doomster over there, and I don't like listening to you. Listen, turn the dial. That's the last thing I want for you to listen to something you don't want to hear. By the same token, I think you need to know, so I'm going to volunteer and tell you, hey, listen, have you thought about this? Hey, are you really sure next time you walk into church that you want to walk up on those steps to the altar? Hey, you really sure you want to go to a church that's got a hewn altar in there? You really sure next time you go into court you want to raise your hand, swear an oath? Hey, you really sure you want to practice Christmas, Easter, New Year's? I don't know. It's up to you. It's your choice to make. It gets a little worse, though. I mentioned this to you the other day. I'll mention it to you again. All you ranchers out there in the West, talking about land Sabbaths and Jubilees, then shall the land enjoy your Sabbaths, verse 34, as long as it lies desolate, and you be in your enemy's land. Hey, kids, in order for this land to lie desolate and you be in your enemy's land, that means you got to be conquered in a military conquest and then captured and deported to a foreign country. That's what's coming to America. Coming to a city near you, as old Kent Hovind used to say, before they rounded him up and threw him in jail for tax evasion. You know, I've got to ask, you know, Kent, you know, nice guy, I really like that guy, Kent Hovind over here, he got off on this tax protest thing over here, he didn't pay his taxes, and so now they locked him up in jail. That income tax is a penalty that we pay, kids, for not tithing. I got to ask myself, hey, was that Kent Hovind tithing? That income tax is the penalty that you pay for using unjust weights and balances. Was Kent Hovind using unjust weights and balances? Was he using Federal Reserve notes and credit cards and checks and stocks and bonds? I mean, he was a preacher, and then he was getting into the pulpit. Did he have an altar in his church with steps leading up to it? Was his altar made with iron tools and hewn? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there because, you know, going to prison isn't a blessing, that's a curse. Now, there have been some times when guys like Daniel were thrown into the lion's den. That wasn't a blessing. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego went into the fiery furnace. I wouldn't call that exactly a blessing. And Job, you know, he went through some boils and he lost all of his property. But the difference was that all of those men, Job, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Daniel, were obeying God and keeping His commandments. And as soon as their enemies got through afflicting them, then the worm turned and God kicked ass. And Nebuchadnezzar, the guy that threw Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace, made an observation. He said, "Now I know who the God of heaven is." He didn't know until he saw these three guys go into the fiery furnace and said, "Hey, who's that fourth guy in there?" Now, that was Big Mike. Big Mike. Michael the Archangel. Now, a lot of times people will ask me, they say, "Well, you know, you can get run over any time by a Mack truck." And there's a story over here in Ecclesiastes about chapter 9. I think it's 9. Verse 11. And it says, "I returned, and I saw unto the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, and neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to the men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happens to them all." Time and chance. Mack truck runs over you. Guy gets cancer and dies. Old Hans Wagner, Hans, died of cancer. Hell of a nice guy. Liked him. He got cancer, prayed to Jesus, and died. I don't think he was eating pig. He was pretty good about his diet. But he's doing something over here. And I don't think old Hans was obeying God and keeping His commandments. Because if he was, then God owes him a bunch. It's called a wrongful death. Because God said that He would fulfill all of our days. Let me show you that one. That's in Exodus 23:26. So you flip over here to Exodus 23:26. And God comes along and He says, "I'm going to fulfill all of your days." And then He says, "There shall nothing cast their young nor be barren in your land, and the number of your days I will fulfill." He says, "I will fulfill all the number of your days." How many days are you people entitled to? What is the number of your days? Has anybody ever, have you ever been to church and the preacher said, "Hey, listen, do you know that you guys are entitled to 25,550 days? Of life, 25,550 days. You'll find that in Psalm 90, verse 10. Psalm 90, verse 10. See if I can find that for you here quickly. I'm right here. Here it is. "The days of our years are 70 years and 10. And if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off and we fly away." 70 years, 25,550 days. Multiply it out, see if you can come up with a different number. "All of the years of our days are 70 years and 10, and if by reason of strength they be 80 years. Hey, listen, some people are a little stronger than others and live to be 80. David lived to be 70. Now, I told you that you got an angel over here, so let's take a look at that. It's over in Matthew 4, verse 6. And that's also cited out of the Psalms, little statutory benefit that you get here. Remember, if you obey God and keep His commandments, there's some benefits. And if you don't and you give Him the finger, then there's some curses. Over here in Matthew 4:6, He said to him, "If you be the Son of God, cast yourself down, because it is written, He shall give His angels charge concerning you, and in their hands they shall bear you up, lest at any time you dash your foot against a stone." Jesus went on to correct him. He said, "Now listen, that's true. If I fell off of this temple, I'd hit the awning at the bottom, it would break my fall, and I would not be killed, because my angel would save me, bear me up. But it's against the law to tempt God. So if I jumped off of here, I'd get killed. If I fell off of here, I'm not 70 years old yet. Now let's put these scriptures together. Time and chance happens to those that are not under the terms and conditions of the contract. Because under the terms and conditions of the contract, you're entitled to all of your days, which is 25,550. That's 70 years. Boys and girls, if you're under 70 years old, you're not going to die till you're 70 if you're practicing this law. Now, that's one of the benefits. One of the reasons that I like practicing the law of God is because it's got benefits attached to it. Now, I'm 68, and I'm pushing 70, but I can be pretty cocky and confident that I am not going to have a Mack truck run over me today because I'm practicing the Mosaic law. Now, after I get to be 70, you know, the contract has been fulfilled, you know, time and chance, but not until I'm 70. And if I've got a guardian angel working for me, which all of us have, every man on planet Earth, 6 billion people on planet Earth have six billion angels watching out for them, as long as they're obeying God and keeping His commandments. Now, 250,000 people that got killed in that tsunami here a couple of years ago, their guardian angels did not save them, as evidenced by the fact that they're all dead. Now, that ought to send a pretty strong message to the rest of us. So that's why I brought this subject up. You know, obeying God and keeping His commandments have a lot of benefits. It's not a negative law at all. It isn't any more negative than telling your kid to stop at the curb, look both ways, wait for the green light, and cross the street in the crosswalk. And your kid looks at you and says, "You're just trying to spoil my fun. So I'm not going to look. I want to run across the street in the middle of the block against the light in front of the traffic and see whether I, like the Titanic, can steer through 5,000 square miles of automobiles without getting run over." You know, it's a choice that you have to make, isn't it? So you tell your kid to cross at the corner in the crosswalk to protect him. God didn't do anything more or less than that when He gave you 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. He said, "Hey, listen, I need to warn you about this. Let me tell you about pig. Hey, let me tell you about this taking oaths, and let me tell you about land Sabbaths and Jubilees." Now, if you decide that you're not going to practice this law, well, then that's your choice in life, isn't it? And then when these penalties come upon you, you'll know why, won't you? Then you won't have anything to bitch about, will you? All right, now I'm out of time again, so I'm going to have to close off right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. But we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.